Welcome to the About Sex podcast. I'm your host, Angela Skirtu. I'm a licensed marriage therapist in the state of Missouri and an ASEX certified sex therapist. And you can find me at www.therapistinst.louis.com. Now, today I have with me two very special guests. The first time together on the air, well, at least with me, I don't know if you've done it before, is Kendra Holliday and David Wraith. Thank you guys for joining me. Hello. What's up?
Right. Gang, gang.
So tell us, and you guys are with Sex Positive St. Louis. Actually, you two are, I heard, actually one of four co-founders. Yeah. Is that true? Well, tell me about Sex Positive St. Louis. Let's do business first.
We might as well start, like, for a lot of people who don't know Sex Positive St. Louis, we can start with the fact that Anna was the first person to co-found Sex Positive St. Louis. She had the idea and she contacted me and said, would I be a part of it? And I said, yes. And then we said, we needed two more people. So I reached out to David and she reached out to someone named Jared. And the four of us came together in 2010. And in 2010, we had four members. And then we had our first happy hour and we had 100 people. And then over the course of the next few years, now we're up to over 4,200 members.
That is a pretty big change.
Yeah, that is the Sex Positive St. Louis superhero origin story.
Well, and what?
We're kind of like the X-Men.
Well, and so like a lot of people who are listening have never heard of Sex Positive St. Louis. They have no idea what you do. So why don't you guys tell them a little bit about that?
Sex Positive St. Louis is an adult socialization and sex education group. We have a blog, we have a Facebook page, we have a Twitter feed, all that good stuff. But we've kind of shifted our focus in the last few years from online to in real life. So our focus is much more on events. We do happy hours, we do discussion groups, we do parties. And the, I think, overarching goal is to give people a space where they can talk candidly about sex in a non-judgmental environment, whether they're heterosexual, gay, bisexual, cisgender, transgender, regardless of race, religion, as long as they are, you know, trying to live a sex positive life and not be shaming. We want to give them a space where they can, you know, learn and mix with like-minded people.
Yeah, to me, there's so many definitions of what is sex positive. And one of the definitions I like is even if you are not, even if you're asexual, being sex positive doesn't mean that you need to be going balls to the wall and doing all these things.
Although we do promote balls to the wall if you like.
That's literally true.
Continue. I'm totally messing with you, Kendra.
Yeah. Anyway, it's so important to, we have decades of shame and guilt put upon ourselves because of our families and religion and society, and for someone to find the safe place for them to explore these sexuality topics and just get to know themselves and learn to accept themselves and others for who they are. That was it.
Yeah, and I think one of the big misconceptions about the sex positive movement, about our group, is that you have to be polyamorous, promiscuous, nudist, kinky, queer. You basically have to be like, you know, a naked, you know, sex deviant to be sex positive.
It doesn't hurt, but it's not required.
If you are a naked sex deviant, you have a place here. But you can be a never nude, you can be monogamous, you can be vanilla, you can be, you know, wherever you are on the spectrum, so long as you're not there to judge or shame anyone else. We welcome everybody as long as you're cool. And
yeah, we don't keep cool people there, though. Or not cool people. Those are not
allowed. Cool has a very broad definition. It's not the traditional meaning. But I have a friend who's a sex educator named Gray Dancer. And one of the gifts that he kind of gave me when I first started teaching about sex positivity was his definition is sex negativity is being ashamed of who you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. And sex positivity is just not being ashamed of who you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. And I like to look at the sort of default culture as very hierarchical, like, you know, a vertical, you know, a pyramid where the monogamous, vanilla, straight people, married people are at the top of this pyramid. And the more you deviate from that norm, the lower you go down. And I like to look at sex positivity as just a horizontal, a level playing field where everyone is equal regardless of their sexual orientation, their kink, their relationship dynamic, as long as everything is, you know, consensual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and one thing that we like to do with Sex Positive St. Louis is we don't act like we know everything, but we like to be sex knowledge brokers. So we like to help people find what they're looking for. We like connecting people to what they are seeking. And that's something we take great pride in, is being that umbrella for people to contact us and let them know where they can get a booby cake or pasties or a sex positive therapist, et cetera.
Well, and I want to add something to this too. You know, like, I kind of appreciate that, I guess, horizontal way of looking at things, and also the brokerage thing. I think that's kind of cute. But like, partly because I realize that even as a sex therapist, everybody that comes to me, everybody feels they're so weird and they're so abnormal in some way, shape, or form. And I tell you, guys are all the most normal normaltons in all of Normalville. And like, to me, kink is not, like, it's so not weird anymore because of just how much and how different everybody is in their sex lives. But because as a culture, we're not sex positive, everybody feels broken, weird, or wrong in some way. Do you guys notice that too?
I've experienced it. Like, yeah. my needle for what is normal is so off since starting this group, you know, 8 years ago. And even I sometimes feel like I'm the only one experiencing what I'm going through and that I'm weird. When my wife passed away, my kinks and my sex life got really, really strange. Mm-hmm. And, well, I mean, for me. And when I went into therapy, one of the first things my therapist asked me was, you know, have your kinks changed since you lost your partner? And I was like, yeah, is that a thing? And she's like, oh, it's totally common. Like, there's been, like, you know, peer reviewed, you know, studies on how people's, you know, sexuality changes after the loss of a long-term partner. And so even having been, you know, in this milieu for almost a decade, I can still go through that feeling of being weird and isolated and then finding out that, no, what I'm going through is, you know, pretty common. So I totally understand how people outside of this community who are exploring their sexuality can feel isolated or strange.
Do you notice it happening too, Kendra?
Definitely. So I do sex consulting and sex work and sex surrogate work. And so I get contacted by all kinds of people, not just in the St. Louis area, but really around the world, and they all contact me, and I try as hard as I can to keep up with everyone and try to send them links and help as best I can. And if they need a little bit more than that, then I do offer 1-hour consultations. And that's when I get to meet each of these people on Skype or in person and just find out about all these different people. And it is so heavy and deep, as you know, as a therapist, there are so many different people carrying so many stories and baggage and trauma, and I've heard it all until next week, and then I hear something else.
There's always something new. You know what I find now is that actually more things that are common become weird to me because I hear all of the most unique stories.
Definitely.
So, like, somebody told me about Rosie Palm and the five fingers, and I was like, what's that? And, like, that was the first time recently that I was actually shocked. I was like, oh, man, I guess I don't spend a lot of time with 13-year-old boys.
Yeah, I learned about Blumpkin the other day.
Blumpkin? What's a Blumpkin?
Well, Urban Dictionary's your friend, and I think it's when a guy's sitting on the toilet.
I'm just putting her on the spot for fun.
And you're giving him a blowjob.
Oh, nice.
While he's taking a poop. Or leaving one.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
That's a much nicer sounding way of doing it. Sounds terrible, but, you know, whatever. To each their own.
That's a hard limit for me.
We had this experience. I think this was actually shortly before Sex Positive St. Louis actually started, where Washington University had a panel of sex workers. And it was like Annie Sprinkle, and you were there, and I think Michelle Minx was on the panel. And I think you guys were expecting, like, some really intense, like, questions. And these WashU kids were like, how do you flirt? How do you know when a guy likes you?
Yep.
And one thing sex workers can teach people so much is about consent and boundaries. Mm-hmm. A lot of people doing the normal dating, there's not this many rules in place, so everyone's guessing and making mistakes and not communicating. And if you have these parameters in place, it's much nicer.
What kinds of things do you teach people then that, like, you know, because there are a lot of people listening who are in the dating world, so to speak. What are some good boundaries to kind of know a little information about?
One of my big mentors out there is Dan Savage, and he talks about how gay men and gay culture has it. They're probably 10 or 20 years in advance of us with all of their knowledge of toys and creative sex. And when they meet each other, they say, what are you into? What do you like? What do you want? And people don't even go there. They just imagine that all women want to be finger banged immediately. And they imagine that
women are
like radios that need dials adjusted. And they just, because they see these things, they don't ask. Mm-hmm. And they assume, and people end up enduring all these things and just waiting for it to be over instead of thinking, you know, I really love my underarms being stroked because I keep them hairy for that reason. And then that's a whole new erogenous zone. That's great.
Mm. So really the big thing is just learning how to talk about sex, what you want, what you don't want, what's okay, what's on the table, and not just assuming that everybody looks exactly the same in the bedroom. What a concept.
Yeah, and we've come so far. David and I are about the same age. I'm 45. He's my little brother, just a little bit. And we've made many mistakes throughout the years. We've learned so much. And if we can take that knowledge and really talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, maybe other people, I think younger generations are going to have an advantage. I heard they're not having sex. I've heard all this millennials aren't having sex. But I also hear that they're learning much more about consent and pleasure. And so I'm very excited about that.
Well, maybe, you know, what I do know about the research on that is that when people learn more about sex and they're more educated about sex, they do wait a little bit longer to have sex because they have a little bit more respect around it. So it may just be that perhaps they're thinking before they have sex.
I hope. Well, I know men, boys masturbate pretty much as a default. I know girls get into it as well, but I hope that girls are really learning their way around their bodies and knowing what feels good so that they can teach their partners. That would be nice.
Well, I'm still hearing stories where women are a little uncomfortable with their vaginas or their vulvas. Mm-hmm. There's debate on whether to use one or the other, so I'll use both. Mm-hmm. But I still hear women who struggle, or they've never looked at it, or they're scared to look at it. You know? I don't know why. It's a beautiful flower.
Yes, and each one is different. And if we could just get in touch with that, then mm-hmm. we don't need to wait for a partner to be that permission.
What do you think is important for people to know when they're dating, David?
Well, I think for men, straight men, there's so many like ways to chop it up, like cisgender men, straight men who like women, whatever. But as a man who is heterosexual and primarily interested in women, that's kind of the audience that I kind of try to reach out to. And I think that one of the most important things I think men need to learn is play the long game. Like, don't be so thirsty and don't be so eager. I feel like Carol Queen, one of my favorite sex educators, has this phrase that she uses where she tells people, you know, you're moving faster than my turn-on speed.
Oh, and I like that.
I think, you know, kind of physically, once you are in the bedroom and even sort of metaphorically during the courtship ritual, I think men just need to slow down.
I 100% agree.
Stop being so eager and, you know, be patient.
Yeah. Okay. So as a sex worker, I do things a little bit differently. So when someone contacts me, they say their name is Bill and they want a tantra massage. And that's all I know about them. And there's no way I can perform that beautiful service, that sacred act on someone named Bill who I don't know, never met, have no idea if he's law enforcement, you know, whatever. And so I have to go through a certain thing to get comfortable. I need to be comfortable in order to be able to be in a vulnerable space with somebody. So I find out their name is Bill, then I screen them, then I have a talking consultation, I get to know them, and then I decide if I want to proceed into intimacy with them. And so many just want to jump straight to things so quickly, and
That might be why they're having problems dating.
I know. And so they end up burning the bridge. I feel like their dick sabotages them. And that is just very sad.
Dick saboteur. That's going to be like a new phrase.
Dan Savage has another one called dickful thinking.
Where I love it.
When you're walking around and you see a woman give you eye contact and you're like, oh my God, she wants to have sex with me. But that's dickful thinking. It's not true.
Oh, I love it.
And
I
maybe she does want to have sex with you and she's really hoping that you don't say or do anything to mess it up.
Thank you.
So many guys don't realize that if they just act right, they're in there, but in their eagerness, they talk themselves out of getting laid or getting a date or getting a phone number.
Well, you know, actually what's funny, so since you guys are both, it's okay for me to say, in the polyamorous type community, okay, just making sure. So one thing I've learned from my polyamorous clients and just friends in general is that actually you guys are great on the whole patience thing. Like, it's kind of a hallmark for polyamory to like take things at people's pace, to have a lot of those conversations and to really meet people where they're at. But I'm wondering what you guys think about that.
And also to know that polyamory or intimacy is not just sex, and to build mm-hmm. intimacy, there's different layers and levels of physical intimacy and emotional intimacy. And when you build those up, it makes it so hot. So if there's 12 stages of intimacy, a lot of people skip some of those steps and then they have a weak foundation and it doesn't sustain.
Wait, did you say there are 12?
Well, Desmond Morris has this 12 stages of intimacy that starts with eye contact and gets all the way up to intercourse.
Okay.
And a lot of people skip it. And so I'll sometimes in my surrogate sessions have us just even in 1 hour go through the 12 stages so that they can learn that instead of just jumping right to the boob.
And I think that's one thing that men need to understand is if you try to skip those stages, that's part of the way that you can sort of talk yourself out of, you know, sex or relationship because you haven't built that level of comfort with your potential partner. And I think that we as men, because I think for lack of a better word, we have fewer natural predators than women. Like we're the danger, as Heisenberg would say. Heisenberg, the...
And I don't see many cougars around in either. So like you've even escaped some of your dangers now.
Oh, you mean like actual cougars?
Yeah, no, I was thinking like, I didn't think about cougars. That's right. He likes to date the older ladies.
But because we don't understand, like, I think... the average woman's need for safety, mm-hmm. we come off threatening, or we don't understand the importance of making a woman feel safe before they can be intimate with us.
Yes, I feel like women need to feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. They need to build up some trust before they're willing to expose themselves in the most intimate ways. And often the women are being penetrated and the women have higher risk of different things. So if you could just honor that a little bit. That sounds like if a woman's so comfortable, it's not going to be sexy. You also have to balance keeping some erotic tension in there. You have to learn how to give and receive and all that good stuff.
But. And safe is not boring. And safe is not being a nice guy, you know, trademark.
I appreciate that. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I think a lot of guys want to be a good guy. I kind of see it as like a pillow they fall into, or I don't know exactly how I'd put it. But
well, when I say that, women, for the, I mean, not, and not all women, like nothing is blanket. I know women mm-hmm. that are all about the danger and that's great for them. I usually run the other way. But I think that a lot of guys interpret that as, oh, if I'm a nice guy, if I perform the role of the nice guy and the safe guy, I'm going to get sex out of that. And it's like, well, no, that's just baseline. That's being a decent human being. On top of that, you still have to have chemistry and you have to have a connection and she has to be attracted to you and she has to be interested in you.
And you have to have some talents and you have to be interesting in the personality.
Yeah, you can almost get friend zoned, actually. I see that a lot with couples that I work with where there has to be a balance between a little bit of that adventure and chaos and that safety and security. But if there isn't that balance, then they either get friend zoned or they like fight all the time. It kind of like two extremes because you can have that passionate fighting extreme too.
Well, I think a lot of mistakes the guys make, and I talk to some older men who come to like our events who are like widowed or divorced, and they're like, I'm trying to find a girlfriend or I'm trying to find a wife. And it's like, I think that's the wrong goal. I think the goal is just to work on yourself, improve yourself, be an interesting person, be out there, meet a lot of people, meet people with common interests. And organically, I think you will start to find people that gravitate towards you and that you have a connection with. But it's, as Kendra often says, you have to bring something to the table more than your desire for a partner. Like, you know, Do you mountain climb? Do you read a lot of books? Do you,
you have something to say?
Yeah. Can you have a conversation?
Yeah.
So basically you're saying you kind of need to be awesome. I'm only teasing, but like some form of awesome bring to the table. Well, you don't have to be like amazing or a superstar, but like be interesting.
Yeah. I think that there, in order to be attractive to other people, you do need some degree of looks, brains, and personality. And looks are least important and personality is most important. And I feel like personality can be cultivated in different ways, just like all the other things of improving yourself. But another thing about the sex positive way, I think, is that part about building relationships and not just having the goal of having sex, but to attend the public happy hour first. Some people contact us when they find out that we exist and they said, where's the orgy? I want orgy right now. I haven't had sex in 5 years. I need orgy. And
really?
We say, first you have to, yes, we
what
have.
What makes you think you can handle yourself in an orgy? Well, like, let's just be fair.
Like, slow your roll. Let's slow down and come to a happy hour and then do the, you know, just take it like that. And it really will pan out better because if you want to go to orgy and again, Bill, I don't know you. You can't. No.
It's like, no, nobody knows you and you're scaring me.
Yeah.
I'm not letting you into my orgy. right? No, it makes sense to me. And I do see that in the dating world, that it seems like the guys are going very quickly. And especially, I don't know if it's because it's online a little more now that people are dating too, but I wonder if that's part of it, is that the barrier there of like, you have to meet somebody in person isn't always there. And so I think sometimes because there's that anonymity at first, I'll see things come out very quickly and sooner than you would expect. And what I find women having to do is just sift through all of this like chaos of dick, essentially.
Well, the cock shots that come at you.
Cock shots. And like, I didn't solicit that, sir.
Yeah. We have friends, including myself, who will bill them, like send them a tax or invoice them for that assault.
Oh, really? How much would you charge?
Well, my fee, if someone sends me a cock shot, I will charge them $50. And if they pay me $50, then they can continue to engage with me. But if they don't pay that fine, then they have to go away, and they always go away. So it works out great because
anyone definitely don't
who
pay
does
you.
That, I hope it's a learning process, an educational thing for them, but I just don't, there's so many good people out there. I don't need to be dealing with that riffraff.
What are your thoughts on the online dating piece? I don't know if you do any online dating or not.
Do you have time?
I don't, because here's the thing. Well, see, here's the thing. I've met women online and had like wonderful sex and wonderful relationships, but it's usually by online, it's usually like Facebook or Twitter, as opposed to like OkCupid or Plenty of Fish, because I'm on social media a lot, and you can get a sense of who I am, and I can get a sense of who other people are from their social media profiles and the things that they post more than I can get a sense of them from their dating profile. And there's nothing else keeping me on a dating site other than scrolling through people's profiles. And all my experience with dating sites has been terrible. And that's why
I've heard that from most people, actually, about the dating online situation.
It's so easy to really not get a picture of who the person is. And then you meet in person and there's no chemistry.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's good that we've shifted to in real life, because when you get to, when you're on a date with just one person, you only see them really interacting with you and maybe, you know, the server. Whereas when you're at a happy hour or a party, you get to interact with many people at once. You get to observe them interacting with others. You get a much better picture of who they are. So my thing is, I like to meet people in real life.
I guess since we're on this topic, if people did want to do that, like, what do you guys think? What a dating advice would you give to the audience of like, where should you go in person to meet people? Because I've always thought, okay, the bar's not the greatest place, but I mean, plenty of people go to it. I call it the watering hole, actually. Mm-hmm. And I know you guys have your sex positive events. Would you say those are good places to go?
Well, I mean, if you're like super conservative, maybe not. But if you're a little bit liberal, our events are great. I think meetup.com is a wonderful resource. That's really what helped blow our membership up to
meetup.com.
Yeah, the numbers that we're in. And I think that if you're into hiking, or I'm in a movie meetup group. You know, I think that like meetup groups around a common interest is really a great place to interact with people, get to know what they're passionate about, what they're interested in. The pressure is lower than at a singles bar or something. So I think that just, you know, getting out there and doing the things that you're interested in and interacting with other people. And it's not necessarily that, oh, you like movies, I like movies, we should date. But, you know, there are people that I'll meet in like my movie meetup and be like, oh man, they would be perfect for my friend, you know? So again, it's just like widening your social circle.
Yeah. Everything is connected. And I feel like I've never applied for a job online and gotten that job. It's always been word of mouth. And so if anyone is single and looking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. It really is very good to do. And it's so hard to do if you have anxiety or are very shy or have some sort of issue that kind of keeps you from being super socially lubricated.
What? Socially lubricated? I love it. Meaning maneuvering, easily maneuvering in and out of social circles?
Yeah.
I like it.
I feel for the people who come to a very first event of ours, it can be very overwhelming. We usually get about 40, 50 different people at least, and just a wide range of people. And if you're coming there alone, we have women who come single, solo, as well as men. The reason why I Like, I have a hard time doing that. That's why I created this empire, so that I know everyone.
So you could
already
meet people. It was all
and
a dating.
I'm already popular, so I feel like if people can come and they just, and if they feel like, oh, that was a little bit nerve wracking, but they try again, and just, you know, be patient with it. It really will. You'll become recognized, and it's just really a very non-cliquish group. I feel like for being in St. Louis, we have a very diverse organization. We have a very welcoming group of people. It's just really important to practice basic etiquette and make sure that you're asking people questions and being friendly and not just lurking in the corner. It's hard.
Lurking is creepy, I hear. So I am really curious, since you guys said you were willing to talk about your personal relationship, I hear there's a sordid history here. I'm only teasing. Although if it is, I'm sure interested in hearing it.
Can we review? We've been friends for about 10 or more years?
Yeah, like since 2007? It'll be 10 years this January. Okay. We met in 2009.
So our relationship history.
We don't have a sordid history. We have a sordid present. Like, our history is really tame.
Okay.
It's only gotten interesting really recently.
Well, tell me all about it, since you guys said you would share. It always is complicated.
So starting out, we first met at one of the Beautiful Kind happy hours, right?
Right, and in 2009,
you saw me advertise that on my blog or something, and then you showed up in your leather jacket, and I feel like I thought I already knew you, but that was...
You knew of me, but we'd never met.
Okay. He had a reputation.
Is it the same leather jacket you came in here, or you have a new one since?
I have several, but it was probably that one because that's my oldest one.
I wondered if you just have like a closet of 15 leather jackets and you just pick one.
Five.
Well, that's still a pretty good assortment. All right, anyhow, so you saw this leather jacket.
Well, so then we became friends, and he learned about all of my TBK, Beautiful Kind stuff. I learned about his... Oh my gosh, I call you an enigma. You're multifaceted. He's so interesting. He does all these things. He makes films and photography, and he's an amazing writer, and he public speaks. He's just on and on and on. And he also, which we'll get to later, is very good at cleaning.
He's very modest.
Cleaning. Anyway, we'll get to that later. But anyway, so we did some photo shoots.
Yeah, let me, real quick though. Mm-hmm. So here's the real behind the scenes story. I used to stalk sex educators, and most of them were on the coast. So they were like New York and San Francisco, and it's like Tristan Taramino and Susie Bride and Annie Sprinkle and Betty Dotson. And
I remember the Betty Dotson. Yeah. You got to have sex with her, right?
Why are you bringing up all this stuff?
It's fine.
Carol Queen. And so someone turned me on to this blog, The Beautiful Kind, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. She's right up my alley. What? She's in St. Louis?
What?
And this is when Kendra was still like anonymous on her blog, but because I'm kind of stalkerish and I'm a good internet detective, I was totally able to find out who she really was. I saw her for the first time at Tristan Taramino's book signing at Left Bank Books. And so it was kind of my mission to become friends with Kendra. Mm-hmm. So I started like sending her little, like, you know, after we met, I started sending her little links to articles and things like, oh, I think you'd be interested in this.
Oh, that's
and
a then, great first step.
Yeah, I started doing photography. And I was like, hey, I'd really love if you'd come and post for me. So we did a photo shoot, and the picture got accepted into Naughty Gras. So that was kind of my way of like working my way in and sort of like dropping little hints that I was really knowledgeable on, you know, the sex positive thing. Mm-hmm. And luckily I did that in time, so that when Sex Positive St. Louis started, she recommended me.
In 2010. And so then we began our true partnership with the professional side, with being co-founders of Sex Positive St. Louis. And we've spent many, many meetings and events and time together and planning and strategizing and partying and on and on, and all platonic. Everyone's so excited to know that we've never had sex. We've never dated.
Never kissed. Nothing. Mm.
And everyone's shocked because I do that with everybody. Wait, so what's up with that?
Did we kiss once? Did we like try to kiss once and it was like super awkward and weird?
I'm sure I was drunk.
There was like a bunch of people around. We were like doing
it
for
a dare?
An audience. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, that's different.
And it was
though,
like totally like PG-13.
But we have shared lots of intimacy.
That's true.
So where did that start? How did that happen?
Well, I'm a service submissive. And
so service submissive is?
Yeah, you'd have to explain that. I don't think everybody knows that.
Basically, I'm, you know, in the BDSM community, in the kink world, I'm submissive. I'm not a dominant. I like to be told what to do rather than tell other people what to do. And specifically, I like to serve. So I like to like clean and do chores and things like that for, you know, dominant women. And a lot of my BDSM relationships have been based around service. Mm. And I haven't had a local like dom for many years. And then my wife got very ill and like all of my focus went into caring for my wife. After my wife passed away, I started looking for a new dominant that I could serve. And it was all about this process of like starting a new dynamic with a new person, like a stranger or someone that I sort of kind of knew from the community. And it occurred to me, why don't I offer my service to people that I already like know and love and know that I'm compatible with? Mm-hmm. So I just reached out to Kendra and offered to be in service to her.
Mm. And so I was said, what does that look like? Because I'm submissive in my personal life and I do pro dom work with my clients. So I wasn't sure how that would be. But
what's
then
pro dom work, by the way, we got to define it all.
It's when you're a dominant who's being paid for it. So it's a service, a professional dominatrix.
And pay for play.
Pay for play, yeah. And I'm not a sadist, but I do enjoy the sensualness and the role play and all that grown up fun playtime where you set up a scene and then you get to play around within that scene and you have the negotiation at the beginning and then you have the session and you keep checking in with each other in sexy ways. And then my favorite part is aftercare.
You know, I just want to point something out about that. That's super important. So for people who've never done kink, dom, sub, play, because I get a lot of people who kind of come into my office after making some mistakes in this area. And so when you mentioned that, I was like, that's a big piece of it is not like, so I think people get this culture, like, I know this sounds serious, weird, but there's a cultural representation of like the scene plays itself out. There's never a stop or a break or even like check-ins along the way. They just magically know how to do this. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think some of the better work people are checking in over time. Maybe they work into stuff like that, but they even have like verbal and nonverbal ways of communicating with each other throughout so that they've learned to read each other well. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of practice and experience, and it's important to be intuitive and recognize body language and definitely do your homework before you start putting clothespins on people, I guess.
Is there a story behind that?
Oh, I have so many stories. But anyway, so David, I thought, how is this going to look? And so then you came over and cleaned my house. And the thing that makes it really fun is that a lot of my friends hire housekeepers and a Minute Maid and different services where a couple of women come over and they clean your house in a very fast fashion that may be sub-quality. I don't know. I'm not trying to judge. But anyway, so then they leave and then they were strangers in your house. Fine. So David comes over and he's naked. And so I have this naked man cleaning my house. And he's really good looking and he does a really good job. And it does give me this feeling of I really get off on it. I find it to be really sexy and
it's
empowering.
Like a naked Mr. Clean.
And what's really important with David, is David is that he really does focus on that. And it's really for me and it's not for him. And that is so hot because a lot of submissive men, they're really thinking about their dick the whole time. And that doesn't get them very far when it comes to doing a good job. And it also exhausts me because they're constantly trying to get attention from me while they're trying to say that they're doing something for me. So I truly can sit and work on my emails or take a nap or take a walk while he's doing things. And I get to just kind of watch him walk around the house and do things. And
every now and then a glance.
And he always leaves me lovely surprises. And then I love that he'll clean my stovetop and he'll take a before and after picture and he sends it to me. It's like him doing follow-up and all those moments and I just every time I walk around my house I think about him all the time and it's just magically nice and there have been just little moments in that where you do the beginning ritual of kissing my feet and then you do certain chores and one thing I've had to learn is to be more making a list of telling him what needs to be done. He prefers that much more than if I just say, go figure it out. You know, he wants specific things, but I do love the surprises. I love coming into my basement and seeing it all organized. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And so since that time, I have hired him as an assistant. Like he is part of my support system. And so that's amazing that he has proven himself so much that I'm actually paying him to do things and help me keep me on track. Like, he helps babysit me and stuff. So it's really nice.
So you're like actually being taken care of, not, you know, I guess dick care of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I'm only taking care of you so you get on my, you know.
And then towards the end, there's the closing out ritual, kissing feet again, or if we have time, a foot rub and things. And then it's so nice. I have a thing where I always want to leave people, places, and things better than I found them. And that's what he does all the time. And I am very honored to get all this quality time with him as often as we can.
My rates are very reasonable. You can contact me at davidwraith.com.
And how's the experience for, I mean, she's telling about her wonderful experience, and it does sound like a wonderful experience. I'm curious what it's like for you.
It's great for me. I really enjoy serving just in general, like in whatever way is needed. And cleaning is kind of my zen. And I get a certain amount of satisfaction from cleaning my own place, but it's very different. So cleaning for other people, it allows me to like, and when I'm cleaning my own place a lot of times, I'm distracted because I know what everything is and I'm in my house and I can do other things and whoop, whoop, wham. But when I'm cleaning someone else's space, I'm totally focused on their needs. It allows me to kind of get out of my head. So it's very zen. It's very like meditative to me, but it's also, you know, I'm naked. It's also kind of sexy for me. Mm-hmm. It's like my favorite thing.
Sexy and therapeutic is what it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, anytime you can get in your zen mind, that is the best place to be.
That flow is one of those keys to happiness, finding pleasure, having a flow, and making a difference. Those are all very important parts of having a good, happy life. And then, so I would say that we have an intimate relationship.
Absolutely. We have a relationship that is more intimate than a lot of women that I've actually dated or had sex with. Like, very few women have pissed in my mouth. Kendra has.
And she really?
Yes.
All right, and that's fine.
And that was one night when we got together for a special quality night kind of slumber party. And we were hanging out, listening to music, making dinner together. And you said, would you do this, or would this sound like fun to you? And I was like, oh my gosh. Because I do it to people all the time. But David, oh my gosh. So I did. And what was it like?
It was cool. It was, I mean, you pissed in my mouth. It was great. I loved it. No regrets. No other woman has inserted a metal rod into my urethra.
I did sounding on David. So urethral sounding is when you take sterilized metal rods and you insert them in the urethra. And the goal is to create new, interesting sensations. And one of my favorite things to do is penetrate a man. I love it so much. Like, I totally get off on penetrating men in their urethra or prostate massage. Those are my favorites. And so I got to do that to you. And you made one little face and everyone ran out of the room. But I was very gentle.
It was at a party. It was in front of an audience. And it was totally spur of the moment.
And you just decided on a whim, this is what we're doing. Everybody was around, but you were actually fine through it.
Oh yeah, I was fine.
And that party theme, I love theme parties. And I do offer people, you can't say play party, you have to say orgies. So they are orgies, there's group sex involved, but there's a lot of play scenes happening at these play parties. And they can be kinky, they can be vanilla, they can be for swingers or whatever, but it's not typical swinger party where it's heteronormative and everyone's buff. It's more about people being really accepting and nice and trans-friendly and bi-friendly on both, not just women, but men too, equal rights or whatever. And so that theme was medical theme. It was, I think, is there a doctor in the house or something like that? And I did that one as an experiment for myself. And I thought the sounding demo there was one of the edgiest things. And a lot of people witnessed things they weren't used to. It was a very kind of dark theme night. But you had a really nice time. There was very sexy other stuff going on too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was great. But then after we did our thing, then it continued to keep getting more elevated into shocking zones. Like there was this one man there who was dressed up as the Joker. He was dressed up as a Joker, like with a lab coat, and he had his submissive, and he actually stapled her vulva together. And that, to me, was way above and beyond. Not that I was, like, horrified.
I mean, whatever, they can do what they want to do as long as it's consenting.
They had their intense scene, and of course, they were into it, but I was like, oh, I was not expecting that. So I love being surprised.
Oh, interesting. Well, guys, we're towards the end of the episode. On that note, stapling a vulva. I just wanted to ask if there's any final things you guys want to plug, either individually or as the sex positive group, because like I know you guys have your individual sites too. So why don't you tell me, give you each a space.
Well, you can find Sex Positive St. Louis at sexstl.com. And there'll be links there to all of our social media, or you can just Google us. You can find me at davidwraith.com.
And I'm Kendra Holiday at thebeautifulkind.com, and I'm on Twitter at TBK365. And we're always creating new events, so check our calendar. And thanks for believing in sex positive in St. Louis.
And thank you, Kendra and David, again, for appearing. They've appeared on my show many times. You're both very interesting and fun people to interview. And of course, you guys all know me. You've been listening to www.aboutsexpodcast.com. If you want to find me and get therapy from me, because I'm a marriage and sex therapist, you can go to www.therapistinst.louis.com. And you can also check out my books. I have Helping Couples Overcome Infidelity or Premarital Counseling, and both are available on Amazon. So also for onelast.com, feel free to email your questions to aboutsexpodcast@gmail.com. And we may just answer them online. So I'm your host, Angela Skirtu, and stay kinky, St. Louis.